He's back.
What color is your hair?
When I saw him, I almost cried. Seth Rollins is back, everyone, and we're back here another episode of BBS Wrestling, talking about Extreme Rules. We're reviewing it now. As always, Benny, I'm your host. Sean is with us. Sean, how are you doing?
Honestly, Benny, you're like Ric Flair. You just cry at everything, so it's not surprising.
Little baby. And, of course, we have Mr. Stone Cold Steve Koltis. Guys, Extreme Rules, right off the bat, I just want to say, yes, Seth Rollins is back, but what did we think of the show overall?
Sean, you go ahead.
I thought it was pretty good, I guess. It was really a two-match show. We'll get to that one match later on. But
the two matches you're talking about, right, are Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler and The Club and The Usos?
Oh, yeah. You hit the nail on the coffin.
Great matches right there.
It was really just a two-match show. It wasn't like an offensive, like I was offended by the matches or the booking. It was a show with some good matches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like I got my $9.99's worth. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Which is quite a feeling right there. And Steve, your opinion?
It was a good show. It wasn't the best I've ever seen, but I wasn't annoyed after watching it. I didn't regret watching it. I agree with Sean. It was a two-match show, but I mean, those two matches, I was like, you know what? I'm glad I saw those.
Yeah, there are some redeeming qualities to this show. I think there are two very iconic matches that are going to come out of this. Well, I would say iconic for the one, good for the other. But I just want to remind everyone that Sean got one prediction wrong. Well, actually, everyone got one prediction wrong. Sean got two. So, Sean, technically, this is one of the first times I remember that I actually come out on top.
I want to remind everyone that Benny went 2-9 for WrestleMania.
All right, let's dive right into it.
Nice change of subject here, Benny.
I know. I have six
words to say. Woo, woo, woo. You know it.
And I'll never be able to say those words again. I just want to say, Sean, you have a really, really great skill and a great gift to know exactly how WWE Creative is thinking. But I don't know whether to call it a gift.
It's called common sense, Benny.
Or a curse. I know it's common sense.
No, it's called Sean is a realist and doesn't think with his heart. And
exactly.
And he knows, like, he knows what WWE is going to do because they don't care about what the fans want.
They don't. It's almost like you have to, whatever logical thought you have going into a match, you have to think the exact opposite.
Like
if you're a casual fan walking into seeing AJ Styles and Roman Reigns, you're thinking, AJ Styles is going to go over because he's kind of played the babyface here.
I can think what Vince thinks.
Wait, are you saying Sean, are you saying that you are Vince?
No, that's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is I can understand the things that go on in his head.
Yeah,
Sean just knows there's no chance in hell.
No.
I don't know if necessarily everyone wants to know what's going on in Vince's head. But anyway, let's dive right into this pay-per-view, break it down match by match. We'll start with a match by match. We'll start with a pre-show. We have a Dudley's and a Big Cass, showing. I don't really know what to call it. Was it a promo? They're keeping this feud alive. I know why they're doing it, because they want something for Money in the Bank, and they should get it because Enzo's, now Enzo is kind of coming back. He's kind of slowly getting into the fold here. It was harmless, in my opinion, but I want Sean's opinion.
It was fine. It was a pre-show thing. It was okay. You know, obviously they're showcasing Big Cass. I do wonder if how long this tag team is going to go with Cass and Enzo, because thinking like Vince as I do. Big Cass he's poised for a big, big spot.
Yeah, I'm nervous about that as well. But from what I'm hearing and what I'm reading about online, it looks like that Vince isn't going to pull the trigger on this too soon. But I don't know, because I think that if you do that to Enzo, it's kind of like, well, yeah, that's kind of screwed up. But Steve, your opinion on the first segment of the pre-show?
I liked it. It was fun to watch. I like that they're giving Cass mic time, because even though obviously in that team Enzo is the mouth, obviously, Cass is not terrible on the mic. When he was rattling off the food, he was rattling off the food in a very Stone Cold-esque way, but instead of what, they were saying, how you doing? I like that. I was laughing. I thought that was funny when he was rattling off the food, and every time they go, how you doing? I thought that was funny, I like that they kept him strong against two guys because he's a monster. He's 7 feet tall, and you can't teach that.
My only issue is that he's doing Enzo's gimmick.
So. Oh, you know, he is completely that. Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. He's pretty much just like rattling off like clever nonsense, pretty much.
I mean, he's not like going like Enzo will just go insane with his references and everything, but he does have some of that in his promo. And, you know, when Enzo came back on Monday, even look at his promo there, the little that he spoke, he didn't do it that much because Enzo was there. So I'm curious if they do split them, which will happen at some point. If he keeps doing the Enzo act without Enzo.
That goes into my next question I wanted to ask both of you is this seems like, you know, normally when we see a Vince big guy that he wants to push, we kind of get frustrated. We get, you know, your Ryback, your John Cena, Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. I was going to bring that up. when it rains, it bores. When you get guys like this lined up like that, you get frustrated with them. But with Cass, it's something different. With Cass, I feel like it's okay. He's a big guy. We understand that's the one aspect Vince likes about him, but he does have good mic skills, and he's not awful in the ring. He definitely isn't the best, and he's definitely not.
There's a reason why he's been kept under a minute matches,
and there's a reason why he's been kind of held in this tag team. But you know, he's not terrible, but he still needs some work. But would you care that much about? Would you get that passionate about a big Cass push?
No.
No, I really wouldn't. I mean, to be completely honest, I feel if, like, because, I mean, obviously, in order to split them up, one of them's going to turn heel, and it would be big Cass if one of them turned heel. I feel his heel push would go as well as Titus O'Neil's heel push when they gave him that new theme song. He was, like the big hood scary guy. Like, I don't know what they talking about, like, whatever his terrible song was. But I don't know. I feel like it would go about as well as that, and then in a few months, they would just get back together.
Oh, isn't that cute? They get back together. Oh, but anyway, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I would be interested in hearing a big Cass heel push there. But I feel like Vince would probably try to push him to the moon.
Well, I mean, their whole tag team is predicated on the small babyface getting beat up and the big babyface coming in for the save. That's completely what it's predicated on. Just like primetime players where Darren Young was the smaller babyface who would get – he was – I wouldn't say his mic skills were on the level of Enzo's, but, I mean, he was more of the talker than Titus O'Neil.
Actually, during that tag team, Titus was the talker. It was actually reversed.
Yeah, because I remember when I started to get back into it, I remember this was right around the time where it came out that Darren Young was homosexual, and I think they were trying to kind of subtly – not make a big deal about it on air. So you had a lot of long talking segments with Titus O'Neil versus Darren Young, which kind of made me question what Darren Young was even doing in this tag.
Well, they also put the two of them on commentary a few times, and like Darren Young just would barely say anything, whereas Titus would just get into arguments about what was he calling it? The rag thing? With King?
He would always get in arguments with JBL, like always. Be like, don't talk. Yeah.
Anyway, let's go into Boring Cardboard and Dolph. Why am I still here, Ziggler? This was balding, a no DQs match,
balding,
but
Balding Cardboard.
Balding Cardboard, sorry. Balding card hairline receding
MODOK.
Giant MODOK.
MODOK,
former
MODOK.
NFL
MODOK
player.
MODOK is a good just catch-all term for that guy.
Yeah. Just you got Mr. NXT cluster over here, and then you have Dolph, what am I still doing here, Ziggler. And I say what am I still doing here is because he doesn't really have a role anymore. This was a very poor match. I wouldn't call it awful. I just call it poor because it took a gimmick that it didn't really need, that didn't really impact the match at all aside from one point, which we've seen them do in the past, knock out the ref, low blow, knock out the ref, hit him with a chair, something stupid like that.
The ref wasn't knocked out.
No, but like that's normally how you work around a low blow in a singles match. When in an ODQ match, they didn't do any big spots. It was just
Well, that's because you technically had a no DQ match in the main event. You didn't want to overshadow that match, you know?
I know, but you couldn't have given him one spot.
It's also like, the pre-show.
Okay, don't put him. I know.
You know, it's not really not that big
about
a deal.
But I'm thinking about this in the aspect of you want your heel to look a little bit stronger than he does. Anyway, let's start with Steve. Steve, what was your opinion on the boring card MODOK receding hairline and Dolph whatever?
It was, you know, it was a match. It happened. I watched it. I wasn't particularly thrilled. I will say one thing, Sean. I have to ask you because my NXT memory is a little fuzzy because I've been.
Oh, I am your NXT historian right here.
Yeah, Sean. But you know the move that they were making a big deal about, the deep six or whatever the heck that he did?
Yes.
Has that been one of his signature things for a while now?
For the last 6 months, I believe.
Okay, yeah, because they were making a big deal about that deep six move. So I feel like they're going to try and give MODOK a secondary finisher, maybe. Because I remember when he did that, they replayed it and they made a big deal about, oh, he did the deep six.
I mean, everyone has kicked out of it on the main roster, but on an NXT, he did finish off some people with it.
Yeah.
Mostly jobbers, but yeah.
But that, yeah, exactly. But I mean, they introduced that in that match as far as being on the main roster. So I feel like they kind of tried to introduce that there. But as far as the match goes, I mean, it happened. Like, I wasn't particularly emotional about it. I watched it and I was more like, okay, let's get to the main card, please.
Yeah.
And Sean?
I agree. It was a thing that happened. I'd more so like to bring up the fact that, you know, how do you think Dolph Ziggler feels right now? Because he signed that contract extension for 2 years back in the summer. And he came back and he was put into that Rusev Lana storyline and then just floundered around for a while. And then eventually he was in the Rumble. He didn't really do much. And then he had that icy title match with Owens and got beat.
That's why I gave him
if I was Dolph, I would be highly regretting that re-signing that 2-year deal.
He probably does.
I could only imagine he's regretting that right now.
Like, question, there are rumors that the WWE wants to cut one more superstar.
He's under contract though. Like, I don't.
But this kind of would be a guy you can cut.
But he would. Why would you cut him though? Like, you need someone at a certain level to if you need to feed guys to someone, he would be one
you
of
do.
Those guys. You know, because that's the whole point of this Baron Corbin feud is that they put him with a good worker, and I mean he's not going to win the feud, but like it's just to progress Baron Corbin as a performer, and whether it's working or not, that's what they're doing. I just feel bad for Ziggler that he's in this spot and he's not. Nothing's going to happen to him. Like, he's going to stay there until his contract runs out.
He's not going to get some kind of massive push. Because, I mean, like, I've said before on the show that I'm not a fan of Dolph. I just don't like his gimmick, and I just don't like him. Like, it's the long and short of it. I don't like Dolph Ziggler. But he's not, my personal opinion aside, he's not a bad worker. Like, he's really not. And he's not bad on the mic. He's not great on the mic, but he's not bad on it. And it's sad to see a guy flounder in a position that he knows is not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And like, he just kind of has to run out his contract as like a lower mid card level guy.
Yeah. Especially at one point, Ziggler was the guy. He was at the top of the card.
Yeah, he was. When he was with AJ and Big E, and like they had that whole thing going when he was Money in the Bank and he won, like he proved that he can be the guy, but he made the mistake
of having a concussion and
yeah, you jerk. You decide to get hurt. You're dumb. Yeah. You're stupid.
Pretty
you
much.
You stupid idiot. Anyway. we go into the main card now with a match that seems like it was put together by a stupid idiot. We have the club versus the Usos. The Usos. What's the plural for Us?
Usai?
Usai?
Usos is plural because Uso is singular.
Is it Tensai? No.
Yeah, that's Lord Tensai. That. He's gone now.
He's gone now.
He's a trainer. He's a trainer now.
The Usos should be gone now. Anyway, the club versus the Usos. Sean, do you want to start?
I was surprised. Kevin Dunn actually was muting some of the intro for the Usos. Usually Roman Reigns gets that treatment. The match should have been way better than it was, considering who was in it. I mean, the Usos are not bad workers. You know, they had that amazing 2 out of 3 falls match with the Wyatts a couple years ago. And, you know, Anderson and Gallows are good, too. I just feel like there was no heat on this match, and the crowd was not into the Usos at all. I mean, the right team went over in, you know, the club, but, like, in the
grand... Do you think the issue? I was going to say the ish, the Ushi. God, Uso. Saying the word Uso screws me up. Do you think the issue is with this match that you have the club win clean, you have the Usos win clean, so there's really nothing here? It's just we know what's going to happen.
No, I think the issue is that
the Uso.
I think. See, now you're going to make me say it.
I know. I'm trying to say it.
I think the problem is that the club has not been booked very well since they've come in.
Nope.
And the match had very little build. We didn't find out about it until, you know, we read it on the internet after SmackDown. So it's not like they really built to this match. And tornado tags are kind of weird, especially to structure around, because even though you're not tagging, you know, there's two different fights going on, and they tried to make it work. You know, one would roll out of the ring, the other person would come back in, blah, blah, blah. I just didn't feel like it was, like, a great match. It just didn't feel right. I that's all I can really describe it as.
Going right into Steve's opinion.
I mean, I completely agree. This match, I mean, like, considering how big of a, big of stars that Carl and Luke were over in Japan and stuff, they came over, like, just another tag team. Like, I mean, they just haven't gotten that big build. I mean, yeah, they came out of the crowd and attacked the Usos, and I was like, oh, cool, like, they're going to have that cool, like, you know, underground, like, out-of-nowhere attack, like unpredictable team kind of thing. And they got that terrible entrance, and they have the very gimmicky ring gear, and it's just like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like they could be a lot better than they are. And then the match itself, I wasn't really invested in it. I mean, it happened. It was better than Dolph and Baron Corbin, obviously, but wasn't very invested.
Yeah, I kind of felt like this match suffered from breaking the Benny rule, which is I don't want to see these two teams fight.
Yeah,
I think that Sean, you made a good point in the last podcast where it's like, do you want to see Jimmy Uso fight a one-on-one match? Do you want to see Jey Uso fight a one-on-one match? And again, you don't, because
I always
not,
make good points.
That's why you're a genius and I'm not. But the issue has been that they've tried to work this around the main event angle, and while it has helped a little bit, it also has hurt the two teams involved, because again, they're not this. While they've been focusing so hard on one thing, they haven't really focused
and
on the rest.
I also want to point out, like, they made a big deal about the fact that the Usos were hurt at the end of the match. You know, like, they had to be carried out, and then the main event comes along, and they show no signs of it whatsoever.
Nope.
They ran out like Apollo Crews ran out after
the
Sheamus.
In a way,
really got me hot.
In a way, I guess this new faction between Reigns and the Usos, they're calling the Bloodline or whatever stupid thing they're calling it. It's because Reigns does the same thing. You could hit Reigns with a chair, and then he gets up and he'll deliver. He'll do whatever he'll spear you or whatever. And it's like, dude, sell something.
My thing with the Usos and Roman Reigns is, like, if they're going to be a unified team, I would like to see. Okay, let's, like, bear with me for a second. I would like to see the Usos get a completely, like, their outfits and everything. Like, they can keep the face paint and that stuff, but keep the colors congruent to, like, Roman Reigns' like, gear-wise, like, you know, a lot of blacks, golds, silvers, what have you, and give them a unified theme song. Like, keep it Samoan and tribal and cool-sounding, but get rid of them doing their Siva Tau Haka, and just they all come out in a unified – they all look unified. They all have, like, the same they all have the same entrance, like, new – just a new – like, just a revamp for all of them.
Yeah.
And also, like, so by that point, you're revamping the Usos, giving them a new look, and – you're getting rid of Roman Reigns' terrible offshoot of the Shield theme song, and just kind of revamping them as, because I mean, if they want a bit, like, I mean, I don't know how they're going to go from here. I don't feel like they're going to be a stable from this point. But if they were to do that, I feel like if you just revamp them as a whole and gave a new theme, new look, and just kind of like rebuilt them as this, you know, like the whole Samoan dynasty thing, like, mm-hmm. they're trying to do, I feel like it would help all three of them as like as performers and also as like the stable altogether.
I don't think that they're going to continue as a stable every week.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah,
the connection will be made when they need to. But I like the idea of having obviously all three of them as a heel group, as a stable, have them wear suits. Like they're the
bloodline.
Well, they could be called the bloodline, you know, whatever you want to call them. But like Roman Reigns is the main heel. He's wearing a suit every week, and his backup are the Usos. They don't have to be wearing suit and tie, but like, you know, their variation of whatever, you know, they would wear as a suit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a new look, a new character change, it would be refreshing, but that's not what they're going to do.
Yeah, because I think we want to kind of stray away from the fact that you're just reminding us that they're Hawaiian.
What has been their character change since they came into the company? What has changed?
Nothing. That's my argument I have with every foreign wrestler the WWE brings in. It's not they don't really have a character. Their character is just wherever they're from.
Well,
it's
they're
like
not,
it,
they're not.
It,
they're not foreign though, Benny. They're from Florida.
Yeah,
but they play. All right, we are joined now by Rye Page Joe Back. How are you doing, Joe Bell?
Oh, I got to do like a combination. Equal pay.
I think that worked.
That worked. Just like the actual show, I'm jumping in at this point because when I started watching the show, it was right as the Usos and the club ended.
equal pay. This is our house.
This is our house.
Well, Paige would probably say, "This is all of our house."
Oh, Jobo, so you didn't see the pre-show? Paige was on there. She was talking about the women's title match because you know not involved, even though she beat the champion.
Right, of course, but yeah. You see, here's the thing about the booking there. You know, everyone doesn't get paid equally, and I think that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
No, Ryback's here as well. And I believe I saw Stone Cold marching around somewhere. We might have to talk to him about something in a second. But all right, Joe, I want your quick opinions on Corbin and Ziggler and the club and the
Well, he didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't see those. No, I jumped in like as the club and the Usos match ended. But I will say I figured that both of them were going to win. So I was right. And based on what I gathered about Corbin Ziggler, I didn't miss much.
You didn't miss anything at all.
And then the Usos and the club. Was it an interesting match?
Really.
Okay, cool. That's what I figured.
You didn't miss too much there.
Is it the same match that I saw the past few weeks?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, pretty much. Yeah, it's just this time.
Except this time,
everybody was in the ring at the same time.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Isn't that a great symphony?
Oh, cool. They're really changing things up.
New era.
new era. Speaking of a new era, we have a new United States champion, and his name is Rusev.
Machka.
And that's what this. That's pretty much what this match was. It was a beatdown of Kalisto. There were some good. Kalisto got some shots in there, and he didn't look completely weak. But we'll go right to Steve with this one. Steve, Machka?
Rusev Udria, Rusev Machka.
No, I mean, I knew they were gonna take it. I knew they were gonna take it this way from the very beginning because, like, I'm not knocking Kalisto. He's a great performer, and I love the luchador style, the aerial moves and the flips and the flexibility. I think I love that. I think it's great. I mean, this guy I don't want to say the next Rey Mysterio because that kind of like narrows him into a point, but he is the next. He has all the tools to be the next great Mexican luchador performer in WWE. That being said, I feel like Rusev can do way more with this title than Kalisto can because, first of all, he's been the U.S. champ before, and second of all, I'm a Rusev mark. I love Rusev. There's something about it. Like his mic skills leave something to be desired. I'll say that. But I mean,
he's getting a lot better.
I liked how in the pre-show when they were doing when they did the questions with Lana and Rusev, I like how he played down his accent and talked more like natural. Because obviously when he does the promos like outside of the ring and when he cuts stuff like out on the stage, he obviously plays to his like, you know, his background, like, "You stupid Americans," and he does all that stuff. I like that he kind of toned it down and was more of like the cold, calculated, brutal businessman fighter type. But as far as the match goes, I liked the match. It was good. Rusev got some good spots. Kalisto did, but Rusev just battered him and beat him down. That he put on one of those, just the super accolades at the end, and just completely broke Ryback. You know, completely broke Kalisto. But I just I liked it. I'm glad to see him champ again, although we know is coming.
I like how we're treating the word John, or the name John Cena, as if it's a cuss. We're just going to go. Anyway.
I mean, that's all Mason said as far as that goes.
Sean, put us in an accolade with your opinion.
I might be of the minority here. I actually thought the match was pretty sloppy. Most of it on Kalisto's part, they just weren't really connecting all that well. Hopefully the match on SmackDown's better this week. But like I said, you know, it wasn't a great match, but the ending was okay. The spot that Kalisto took, where he did the back body drop onto the apron, or the edge of the ring where the apron is, was pretty brutal. That's the hardest part of the ring to hit. So I'll give anyone credit for taking any bumps on that. But other than that, like, you know, the accolade was cool at the end. I understand what they were doing with the ref, trying to get, you know, Rusev away, because they were trying to build it up like it was real. I get that. I felt it went on a little too long. And all in all, I thought it was just okay. You know, it was just an okay match.
Now, Jobo, what would you call multiple Kalisto? Is it Kalistai?
Kalistai.
Kalistai? Okay. Listen, I want your...
I thought it was an okay match. Nothing. It didn't really do much for me. I'm glad that Rusev won. You know, it just was, nothing was going on with Kalisto, in my opinion. He's a good performer. But you know, he doesn't really do much for me. And it's funny because, like I've mentioned before, like, Rusev's kind of like warming up, you know, I'm kind of warming up to him. And I'm really glad that this is the Rusev we're seeing now. But if they go the route that is going to get the belt, then, you know, I think, you know, it just shows that they don't care about Ruru.
They don't care about Ruru at all. They like trumpet noises. They like hearing trumpet noises.
Okay, Summer Rae.
Ruru. Oh, little Ruru. Can I hear Paige comment about Rusev?
Ruru is not as great as Alberto. He's a foreign chap.
Oh, man. Speaking of chaps, we move to the WWE Tag Team match, where we have two chaps known as the Vaudevillains taking on the New Day. New Day going with a different setup. Normally, Xavier Woods plays the role of manager. He didn't this match. He threw us for a curve. He took the step in. He was with Big E. And Sean, what was your opinion on the tag team match?
It was, again, okay. I thought that they had one good spot towards the end where they hit the Whirly Dervish,
the Whirling Dervish, yeah,
on Xavier Woods, and it was actually a good false finish. The crowd bit on it, and I kind of did a little too. But I think, and obviously, you know, New Day did win. I think this is we've been told what they're going to do with the Vaudevillains, and that's nothing, because they not only did they kick out of their finish. They lost. We didn't even see them on Raw this week. I feel like this is what's going to happen to them. They're just going to disappear.
Into oblivion. Jobo, your opinion on the tag match?
I agree. It was a good match. I dug it. You know, New Day's great, but like Xavier Woods would be like, let me shoot my shot. I thought that was funny.
I liked how the crowd bit on that too. Like, shoot his shot.
Yeah, they were getting into it. Overall, I thought it was fine. I do agree. I don't think the Vaudevillains are going to go anywhere. Hey, they need a new ascension right now since, you know, Connor's out on suspension. So
Connor ascended too far, I think.
Yep. He flew too close to the sun.
Steve, your opinion on this match then. Interesting note, this was the shortest match. This was the shortest match on the card.
Yeah, I like this match. I like seeing Xavier and Big E wrestle. That was a nice, like, fresh combo, because, like you said, normally Xavier sits outside and talks smack and plays the trombone. But I liked seeing him in there working. And like Sean said, that false finish, I bit too. I was like, oh my god! And then, you know, but I was
make it for a second there. I bet as well.
for a second, I got all tense there. I was like, wait, and then, you know. But I do have to say, I feel like the vaudevillains are kind of going to fall into obscurity. Well, not total obscurity, but they're definitely not going to be at the same level.
Yeah.
But it was a decent tag match. I'll say that.
I can see the vaudevillains kind of being in the Ascension role, but I can see them being in it a little bit longer than the Ascension will be, just because I don't think Aiden English and Simon Gage are going to be doing whatever Connor was doing. But I think this is what's going to happen with the vaudevillains. They're going to be this way for about 3 or 4 years. Maybe they get a run with the tag championships as transitional champions to reward them for their time. But for the most part, this is what we're going to see them. They're going to kind of be around. They're going to job. Oh, I wouldn't say job, but like kind of help get other teams over. And that's eventually what they're going to do.
Benny, I'm curious, what was Connor doing? I'm confused.
I think it was probably performance enhancing drugs.
I mean, he's a bigger guy. I would caution on the side of saying that it was some type of performance enhancing substance.
Part of their policy is they don't say what it is.
Yeah. I mean, this is me shooting from the hip, Sean.
Oh,
this is just me.
Okay.
This is just me guessing. I mean,
shooting from the hip.
It's more of an educated guess. Cause I mean, he's a bigger dude and he looks like he would be, I wouldn't say he's cycling on a lot of stuff, but I mean, I could definitely see him taking some sort of strength enhancer. Cause he's out of the both of them, he's the bigger one, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I think you hit it right on the head. You know, he's a big guy, but, you know, he's not me. I'm a bigger guy.
Thank you, Ryback.
He's a pretty big guy. You know, I don't do steroids. This is all just me working out. You know, when you put your mind to it, anything's possible.
Oh, my God. We'll move into a match that kind of an interesting transition. We're talking about the mind. This one kind of captivated our imagination. It's the Intercontinental title match. And I first want to say, if I don't know if you could call this a 5-star match, but it was about as close to a 5-star match as I think we've seen since, I believe, Owens Cena. I mean, I can't really think of a match.
Zayn Nakamura.
Okay. Well, I was thinking more of main roster, but Zayn Nakamura. This match was fantastic. This was an amazing match. And Jobo, I want your opinion on this.
I loved it. I was reeling over this match. It was just so good. Like, I know we've seen this match kind of already in different forms, but I loved every second of this match. And if they do more things like this, you know, just going from here, like, my God, are we going to have some really great matches in the future?
If you're going to try and make a poster match for the new era, this was the match.
It really is. And look, I know the Intercontinental never sunk as much as the U.S. title, but for me, you know, the Intercontinental was just kind of a title. Here, like, it feels like it's worth something now. Like, these four guys all won it, and they're doing amazing things for it. So, like, this is probably one of my favorite matches in a pretty not a long time, because I'm still relatively new, but, you know, in a while, this was probably one of my favorite matches.
And Steve, I take it you kind of agree with us as well. This was an amazing match.
This was the best match on the card, and I highly enjoyed it. I was talking to Sean during this match, and he brought up a point that I'd like to agree with. As far as, like, Fatal 4-Ways go, Fatal 4-Ways go, there was a lot of pulling guys out of the ring to, like, kind of, like, put the action more into, like, there was a lot of, like, out-of-ring spots. Like, to start the match, Sami Zayn nailed Kevin Owens and sent him right out of the ring and kind of kept him out of the match, like, a decent amount of the match. And then for the rest of the match, there was just more of, like, getting someone out of the ring and, like, the other people in there working. And there was a few spots. I mean, like, when Cesaro did the double powerbomb suplex when he got everybody, that was one of them. But, I mean, like, I agreed with Sean too. I don't like when in those matches that they take someone out of the action and keep them outside to kind of focus on the three others.
It's kind of WWE's typical three-way, four-way booking where you get rid of one guy and then it's just the two guys in the ring, or you get rid of two guys and it's the two guys in the ring, you know?
Yeah. But that being said, I didn't dislike that. Like, I mean, it took away from the match a little bit, but I wasn't like it didn't turn me off of the match. I love this match. It was a great match. I would give it 4.5 stars. It was fantastic, and I loved it. There were some awesome dynamics going on there. And I will say, even though like they were knocking people out, when Sami Zayn started the match with the Helluva kick to take Kevin Owens out, I laughed a decent amount. I was like, yeah.
That was fun.
The thing that got me was Cesaro's face. You kind of just like, well, okay.
Remember, it was a Survivor Series tag match where Shawn Michaels opened the match with his music.
Yeah, he super kicked Mike Knox, and then he pinned him, and he was like, "Who was that?"
Oh yeah, he asked Triple H, like, "Who was that?"
That's what it kind of reminded me of.
Sean, do you remember that spot where he took a drop kick, where Triple H took that drop kick, and he sold it for like 15 minutes?
Yeah,
he was he was wobbling back and forth, and Sean's going and like trying to blow him over, and then Triple H acts like, "No, I'm cool," and he goes to walk, and he falls down.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
It was a funny little moment. It was like, you know, did you hear the pop though after that kick? That crowd went nuts.
The crowd loved it.
It was amazing. But I waited long because I really want to hear Sean's opinion on this. Sean, The Miz, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Intercontinental Title match 4-way. Your opinion?
It was definitely the best match of the night. You know, I thought it was really good. Like you mentioned, the Helluva kick at the beginning, I thought was a nice little touch. A lot of false finishes, and to me, that's the only criticism that I can find of this match, is that it's not a match that you can do often. You can't just have all of these false finishes towards the end of the match and do it every single night, because then nobody's going to bite on it at that point. That, to me, that's the only criticism. But as far as a match goes, I thought it was really well laid out. As far as a 3 or 4 way, they did do the typical WWE thing like we mentioned before, but I thought that it was handled pretty well. And I had made the reference to Steve while we were watching it. I think that's why the 3 way from the Rumble a couple years ago with Cena, Rollins, and Lesnar was so good, because they didn't do that. There was the one point where they took Brock out at the table, but other than that, most of the match was just all three guys going at it at certain points. I thought it was really good. If we're talking like match of the year, I would still say Zayn and Nakamura is the best match of the year so far, but it was definitely up there, I would say.
Zayn Nakamura, in your opinions, that's a 5-star match?
It's at least 4.5.
Sean and I watched that together, and like normally during pay-per-view, Sean and I will be texting back and forth during the match. Sean and I didn't say a word to each other during that whole match. We waited until the very end to be like, what did we just watch? Because that was phenomenal.
And we go
AJ wasn't involved.
Yes, and we go from talking about a phenomenal match to one that wasn't so phenomenal. Asylum match, and again, I don't want to run this match too far into the ground, but it was not very good. Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho, and I've heard some critiques from people that were there, and I know a few that said that the match suffered from following the Fatal 4-Way. And it also suffered from kind of at that point the crowd was ready for a break. And this is where I think you should have put maybe the Club versus the Usos, or maybe you put a Rusev's Kalisto match here. I don't know. Maybe you should have just reworked the card here. But you also didn't do it any favors by giving it 26 minutes, which I don't think it really needed, because it only had about 11 minutes of content. But we'll go with Steve on here. Steve, Dean Ambrose versus Chris Jericho.
This match went way too long. It's like, this match went way too long. And
especially,
like,
not to cut you off real quick, but especially for not a big payoff.
No, really. Like, I mean, I feel like I would have rather have seen just a steel cage match, to be honest, because the fact that like they were constantly climbing and like grabbing like one or two things and then like barely using the weapons, like, I mean, when they grabbed the mop, they were talking about like Perry Saturn. They were comparing like Dean Ambrose to Perry Saturn. I was just like, do not.
Because feud wasn't serious the whole time. This is what we were talking about last week when I was telling you guys that they haven't made the whole thing serious at all. This especially
not at
the
all.
Commentators. And
oh my
perfect
God.
Example.
Yeah, it took Sean. I agree, and I believe we all agree when we say that it was just unnecessary comedy for a match that wasn't a comedy. Like there was nothing if you strip away what the if you don't play what the commentators say, there's nothing comedic about this feud. This is especially for the ending. I will say especially for the ending because while I say it wasn't funny, a big payoff, it was a shocking payoff.
It should not have been funny because considering like these guys have been like going back and forth pretty seriously competing and like doing some like when Chris Jericho put the straight jacket on Ambrose and like and was like hitting him and mocking him too, that's like a serious angle. Like he was
very serious.
He tied him up and was beating him and like Dean Ambrose couldn't save himself. But they made this like a whole joke. Like they're mentioning Perry Saturn and JBL and his favorite son of a Mitch line or son of Mitch. Yeah. It was like, okay, we get it, JBL. Son of a Mitch.
Could you imagine when they did that storyline with Eddie and Kurt? And remember, Eddie was handcuffed and Kurt came out and beat him down. Imagine if they did that and the commentators were making fun of it. You know,
it would have been like, so this is not serious at all. Like, I mean, also on the flip side of that, I feel like if JR had called this match, it would have been way more like he would have sold the seriousness of it way more.
If Morrow called this match, I think it would be. Oh. I would give it as hard of a grade as I do. Well, there are other issues to it, but.
Morrow called the straight jacket angle with Dean and Jericho on SmackDown, but I wouldn't say that was his fault. It was more like he was kind of just saying what he was given. But I mean, I feel like if he was given more free reign, he would have made it way more serious. But to close my point, it's just like it was. I liked seeing Jericho get put on the thumbtacks because it was like, okay, cool, we finally got some like one serious moment, but the match went too long, and besides that the whole match wasn't serious. Like he was hitting Dean Ambrose in the stomach with a 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire, and the announcers were kind of just like, oh, he's getting hit there. It's like, it's barbed wire. Should we talk about how his guts are being shredded? Like, come on.
Somewhere Mick Foley broke a glass and then proceeded to drop himself onto it. Jobo, your opinion on Ambrose and Jericho?
You guys are all a bunch of stupid idiots. I love this match. Not really. I was really looking forward to it. It was disappointing and just long. The thumbtacks were cool. I will say that was cool seeing thumbtacks. And props to them for like actually, you know, dealing with that. But all in all, it was just very disappointing. I think if it was shorter and quicker, then it would be good, but it's just so long.
If I can add one more point, Sean, did you hear when Jericho asked the referee to open the door? He's like, open the door, and the referee's like, I can't, it's locked. And he went, you idiot. I laughed pretty good at that. My sister and I were like, oh my god.
I liked Jericho's face when he saw the thumbtacks.
Oh, that was great. Oh my god, that spawned so many memes. I can't even begin to tell you.
It was that again. It was a decent and kind of shocking payoff, but it was one that it was not worth 26 minutes. But Sean, I hold you last for two consecutive matches because this is a match I feel like you have a lot of anger with. I feel like you're a little bit frustrated with this match.
I've calmed down since Sunday. Look, it's not as bad as what the Kennel from Hell match was.
Oh my god.
But it was definitely not good. The whole psychology of the match was just dumb. Like, so Dean Ambrose goes for a weapon. The first thing he gets is a mop. Like, well, why? Why? You have a 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire up there. Go get that, you know? Or go get the straitjacket. At least the straitjacket, you can put it on the guy and, you know, he's defenseless.
None of us mentioned the whole nunchuck thing, too, which made it way less serious.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It like you guys mentioned, it was too long. I felt like you could have definitely done this match within 15 minutes because really all the match was just go up, get a weapon, hit someone with it for a tiny bit of time, go up and get a weapon, do the same thing. Occasionally Jericho would try to leave and that's all the match was. It was just, and then it built up to the thumbtack spot, which I'll give him credit for doing thumbtacks again, especially in the PG era. I can't remember. When was the last time we saw thumbtacks? Would it have been 10 years ago, maybe?
I would say Nick? I would caution on the side of saying that because like it's hard to pull off thumbtacks in the PG era because like you're going to get blood. Like, there's going to be color. Yeah. Like, there's no way to not do it.
Last time I can remember Thumbtacks would have been maybe the I Quit match with Flair and Foley. I can't remember any other time with Thumbtacks.
I may be reaching back pretty far, but what about Edge and Foley at WrestleMania? That was a while ago, though.
That was the same year. That was earlier that year. But anyway, I mean, I liked the Thumbtack spot for a while. I didn't think they were going to do it, actually. And they were teasing it, which was the only good part of the match, is that they were actually teasing it, and then they finally did it. It just wasn't very good. And like Benny mentioned, it was placed wrong. You just came off of the Fatal 4-Way. It just was not a good scenario. And honestly, I don't want to see this match come back again.
I hope this is a one-off. We don't need another Asylum. I mean,
then again, we said the same thing about the Punjabi prison match, and then they did two of those. So, you never know.
My God.
I think Vince believes that in reverse psychology. So, like, he believes that if you shove something down someone's throat far enough, they'll like it eventually, a.k.a. Roman Reigns. Anyway, Sean, one last comment.
I was sorry, Benny. I was just going to say, like, I didn't like the move that they did to get Jericho on the Thumbtacks. I felt that was like a weird, I don't know. I feel like that was a weird, you know how he just like caught him and kind of like dropped him on them. I wish it had been a little bit different. I don't know. I didn't like that.
I mean, he wasn't near the Thumbtack, so he kind of like moved him towards it, which was kind of good.
I think the other issue is like, okay, let's say you wanted to do a finisher onto a Thumbtack. You can't really do Dean's finisher onto Thumbtacks.
He did though.
Yeah.
That was the finish of the match.
Yeah, Dean caught more of the thumbtacks than Jericho did, because he did them next to the thumbtacks. Like, Dean got him in his elbow and stuff.
Yeah, but it was still within that area.
Sean's right. It was close. Yeah,
I know. I think it's because like I don't really, because like I didn't see any thumbtacks going to his face. Like, you would think that
really hits the ground, Benny?
Well, okay, no, but But, like, you would expect to see some kind of damage there.
Are you guys telling me that wrestling isn't real?
No, that's not what we're saying.
No. It's predetermined.
Let's go into...
Real quick, can I say something about your match?
Okay.
Sure, Paige.
Alberto would have destroyed him all, because he is great. I would love to kiss him.
We've seen that.
blimey.
All right, moving on.
Moving on to the match before the main event. We have a submissions match for the WWE Women's Championship, Charlotte versus Natalya. However, the twist, Ric Flair cannot be at ringside. And if that happened, Charlotte would have lost her title immediately. So I start with Sean this time. Sean, what'd you think of the match?
It wasn't that good, honestly. As predicted, the submission stipulation did not get the crowd back involved. Then again, they did have to sit through the Asylum match, so that didn't help. But yep. The only good part of the match was that Natty pulled out a reverse Indian Deathlock, which I've never seen before. Other than that, it wasn't a great match. Like, even the moonsault that Charlotte hit was not good. She kind of landed on her knees before she actually hit it. It just wasn't great. And then the way that they got out of it, I thought was kind of hokey a bit, with, you know, Dana Brooke coming out as Ric Flair. I just didn't think it was that great, to be honest with you.
I agree. I didn't think it was a great match, but I didn't mind the Dana Brooke thing, because I think one of the issues with Dana Brooke is that she kind of needs someone to be around her. Granted, she needs more of a mouth. She needs more of a actual wrestler. I think that can be Charlotte. I didn't like what happened on the following Raw. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second. Steve, your opinion on this match?
Considering their past track record with Natalya and Charlotte, considering they have good chemistry and they work well together with their match in NXT, which was the best one, and then the one at Roadblock and everything else they've done, this match I was rather disappointed. I was just like, you guys, I mean, they looked like they were kind of struggling to find a flow, and it just didn't feel that great. And I will agree with Sean, the reverse Indian Deathlock is something you don't see very often, so it was kind of cool to see them pull that out, but that wasn't enough to save this match. And then
when Dana Brooke came out, I was like, well, I mean, I okay, like, I guess. And but I mean, I was not a fan. I did not like this match.
And Jobo.
I like their payback match more than this, save for the finish. But that's besides the point. This one was just okay, in my opinion. Wasn't bad, wasn't great, just okay. I didn't mind the Dana Brooke thing either. I'm actually, like, if she can, like, keep doing, like, this kind of, like, annoying, like, heel character, but, like, kind of, like, this goofy character, like, I'd be into it. If that's the route they go. Because just based on the stuff I've seen her with, like, you know, her, like, there was that episode of Raw, and she was, like, walking behind, and she's, like, you know, kind of just being obnoxious and stuff. Like, if they keep going that route, then I think it'll be interesting. It's not just, like, you know, like Charlotte or Sasha or Becky, you know, like the ones we've been seeing right now, like something different.
That's basically her character.
Right. Yeah. Which, you know, I'm all for that. If it's entertaining, then why not? If she's good at it. And so far, I haven't seen anything to say that she's not. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen her much in terms of her wrestling, but maybe she's more of just that kind of posse character, you know?
Wait till SmackDown.
She's the diva Baron Corbin.
I think Baron Corbin's a better worker, actually.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say I retract this statement.
I think again, like I know what they want to do with Dana Brooke, and rumors are that Vince is high on her. Guess why? She's a body. She's a fitness model. If I'm correct,
she was a competitive body.
Yeah,
competitive. She was a bodybuilder.
Oh, she's a competitive lifter. So obviously you have Vince going, oh, competitive lifter. She needs to be at the top of the game.
Bodybuilder.
Like, bodybuilder. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a bodybuilder. She needs to be at the top of the game. But like at the same time, she's a little bit better as a like one of those annoying. I agree with Jobo. She's a very different, annoying heel than we're used to in the women's division.
I enjoy her as a manager. I don't want to see her in the ring. If she's just managing Charlotte, I'm cool with that. That's totally fine.
I feel like, go ahead, Steve.
I was just gonna say, I feel like after what happened at Raw, I feel like she's gonna be more of a manager type role.
I actually chuckled when she was doing the flare walk. Like, I know everyone was like, "Oh," but I actually kind of chuckled at that. I thought it was pretty funny.
Everyone does the flare walk. It's, you know, not that big a deal.
I
will say though,
everyone.
This match to me was the worst of their five matches, and one of
without a doubt
one
without
of those five includes the 3-minute Raw match that the two of them had a couple years ago, back before Charlotte was even on the main roster.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, where she lost to Natty.
Yep.
You mentioned everyone does the flare walk, and we go into the main event now, where I can almost guarantee you Roman Reigns will never do the flare walk.
Yeah, he will.
But
he will.
You think he will? I would never want to see.
He probably has already.
He probably has, and it's just waiting to come out. But
just
anyway.
Like how everybody has given and taken a stunner at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and in a couple of seconds, I'm going to ask Stone Cold about his opinion on the entire card. But really quickly, Roman Reigns versus AJ Styles in an Extreme Rules match. Kind of the same match we saw at Payback, but with a couple more spots.
Almost to a T.
Literally almost to a T. And they even include the pre-show table, which I thought was interesting. I thought someone was going to go through it. Would have liked to
have
seen
that table, Benny. It's made of glass.
I know. I never really got a good handle as to what it actually, how big it actually was. But that's a pretty thick table there.
Yeah.
But when I saw them going through it, I was like, oh, wait a second. Is he going to put AJ through it? Oh, he wasn't. But okay, we'll start with Jobo on this one. Jobo, your opinion on the Extreme Rules match for the title.
I liked it more than I thought I would. I think they did it well, you know. I liked how, you know, they pretty much just didn't, like, just, you know, mess around in the ring for a little while, then go outside. I'm glad, like, it kind of just, like, went outside. And you know the Usos are gonna come out in the club, so it was like, okay, get that. Once they kind of got that over with, I was getting into it more. I thought the finish was good where AJ's trying to do the forearm and Roman, like, spears him in the air. I actually thought they both pulled that off very well. So overall, I would give, like, the main event a B minus.
Okay. Well, what would you give it, like, what is it, two cups of soda?
Five bags of popcorn, two sodas.
Two sodas? Okay.
Yeah.
Sean, your opinion on the main event?
I mean, like we mentioned, I thought it was almost to a T the same match that they had at Extreme Rules, which was a good match too. So,
would you say it was a shot-for-shot remake?
No, there was some differences in there, but I mean, the match, it's like the old, like if the old saying, if you have a great match, you might as well just keep doing it, you know. Which is kind of what they did. A few variations here and there, but my biggest and obviously, like you said, the Bullet Club came out with the Usos and everything, which I thought kind of dragged things down a bit.
Yeah, it did, because you know you were expecting that in the first place, and then you know it's like okay,
especially considering how they did that last month too,
right?
And the finish to me was a little weird because again that was almost the same finish as last year as well, or last month as well. The only difference was that instead of actually almost connecting with the forearm, he kind of rolled through and then hit the spear. My biggest complaint is they officially killed the Styles Clash, because not only did he hit it once and he kicked out, he hit it on a chair and then kicked out as well. So the Styles Clash is officially dead. We can bury it now, which we knew was coming. So that was my biggest complaint of the match. I mean, we knew Roman was going to win, so, but, you know, it was okay. It was good, you know.
And I go to Steve now. Steve, your opinion on Reigns, Styles, and the World Heavyweight title match?
I mean, it was a pretty much shot-for-shot remake with some differences. Obviously, going out in the crowd, you know, and the weapon spots. The thing that made me mad, besides the killing of the Styles Clash, Roman Reigns is proven that you just can't put. You might as well shoot this guy. You can't put him down. AJ was beating him
well,
like within an inch of his life with a chair. With a chair, he beat him down. And then he goes to hit the Phenomenal Forearm, spear, boom, LOL, Reigns wins. Like, okay. I'm not mad that Reigns won, because obviously I knew he was, they're not going to put the title on, they're not going to put the title on AJ, and they're not going to take it away from Roman. But the amount of beating this guy took, it's just like, you really want him to be Cena 2.0. Like, they're building him up to be Cena 2.0. Whatever you, like, anything you do past literally killing this man is not going to beat him, because this, It's unbelievable that this guy could take chair shot after chair shot, just getting beat down in the ring, and then, like, you know, he gets two Styles Clash, one on the chair, one normal, and then, like, he just hits that big old running hug and wins. It's just it makes me mad, because it makes a great performer like AJ look pretty weak, considering he hit his finisher twice and carried out a pretty significant beatdown. But besides that, the match wasn't bad. There were some good spots, and I enjoyed watching it, but I just did not like – I'm not enjoying this whole, like, no matter what you do to Roman, he will not be put down thing.
Yeah, I think it's funny. After you said LOL Reigns wins, I can almost picture now Reigns versus Cena is going to be like their Cena versus Rock.
That's gonna be who can kick out at two the most.
Oh yep. It's gonna be just like the WrestleMania match with Rock and Cena. They're gonna hit finishers most of the match, and they're gonna kick out of all of them. And I can't wait to see it live.
And then also, Reigns is gonna win the first one. Cena's gonna win the second one, and then Reigns will win the third one, and that'll be how that works.
No, but they'll just have one.
but also my thing is too, like, if someone ever hits Reigns with a chair and wins, it's like, hey. Remember when you got hit with a chair like 15 times in the middle of the ring?
Remember when you got Styles clashed onto a chair?
How come that didn't hurt you, buddy? Like, are you getting, like, well, are well, you...
No, you know, if he asked me, nothing can take me down, you know? you know, the Styles clash is nothing compared to, you know, what I do. You know, I destroy all of them.
It's because AJ's a little guy, right?
Yeah, he's a little guy. I'm a big guy. And, you know, put me up against Roman Reigns, I'll show him what it's like. You know, I'll put him down, you know, 3 seconds.
I will say though, if he hit the Styles Clash on the chair in Japan, whoever he did that to would have been out for 5 years.
Oh yeah, no, they would not come back.
Yeah.
Do you think like all the people that have ever been hit by the Styles Clash just kind of stood up and said, "Oh no, shenanigans, bull, shenanigans, that's not right."
I know Yoshitatsu was thinking that.
Yeah, Yoshitatsu was like, "What the hell?"
Yeah, I broke my neck for this.
Hell? Oh my god, yeah, it's true.
Oh, man. But anyway, so that rounds out the card, and thus we're going to talk...
Oh, no, it doesn't. Something happened at the end.
Yes, yes. Good catch, good save there, Sean. In all of the craziness at the end and crowds booing, Kevin Dunn's ramping down the volume, we get a return. And oh, what a return
it was. It was me.
No, no, Ryback, no, it wasn't.
Ryback came out one day.
It was Seth Ryback. Ryback runs out as dressed as Seth Rollins with long hair, and he's just like, oh, yeah. But anyway, we get the return of Seth Rollins, the Architect. And guys, I am so happy to have him back. Unfortunately, he's brought back as a heel, but I've come.
Who told you that?
Sean, you called it. I will once again give Sean his credit. But I think we've talked about it before. His wrestling style is that of a babyface.
Oh, of course.
But it would not make sense for him to come back as a babyface. It would make sense for him to come back as a heel because when he went out, he was a heel.
So?
And
remember when Triple H went out with his quad injury and he was part of the two-man power trip who were killing everyone in the company as heels?
Yes.
And then he came back at Madison Square Garden and was a big babyface?
Yes, but this isn't this, like, as much as you want to try and compare this as the same, it's kind of not. I mean, at the same time, when he was on his way, when he got hurt, at the time he was in that I'm the man phase.
Oh, you're right. It is different because they were actually starting to cheer him before he left, as opposed to Triple H.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, it makes sense for him to come back in the role he's in. It's kind of odd without the Authority because that was one of the reasons why he was where he was. But I don't know. It's wasted money.
That's what it is.
It is wasted money. But it seems like what they want to do is they want to make this into the man versus the man right now. And
okay, you can do that with him as a babyface.
Yes.
Because people are going to cheer him anyway.
I know, but I guess I'm not as upset about him not being a babyface as I suppose other people are. But I guess, Sean, you're a little more heated about this.
Well, I mean, I knew it was coming anyway, but I was hoping that they would surprise me, and they didn't. It's asinine to not make him a babyface. I understand that you're kind of low on heels right now. I mean, we all agree Roman should turn anyway.
Yeah.
Officially turn. But I just don't understand why.
What does this feud become? Like,
it's going to be the same as the AJ Styles feud.
Who's going to play the heel?
Well, Rollins
I don't know
is going to play the heel. He's going to play the heel, but he's going to be cheered.
It's such a weird thing, Sean. Like, this is such a weird moment because they've allowed Reigns to start to slowly move into a heel area, but they still put him up against heels. They're not putting him up against baby faces.
I know.
I hope the direction they're taking Rollins is, you know, you had that exchange with him and Stephanie on Monday Night Raw where he's like coming back and he thinks things are the same.
Yeah.
But they're not. And I hope like it's kind of like he thinks like, yeah, I'm going to get it. You know, I was the Authority's guy. You know, I'm this. And then he gets like disappointed. And like kind of let down, and that kind of like changes his perception of things, and then we maybe start to see like a gradual face turn
you
from
know,
him.
I hope that's the case, but me and Steve were talking before we started recording the show about the brand split and how, and I've been saying for a while that I thought that it was going to be Triple H and Shane at SummerSlam for control of the company. Well, with the brand split, you can't do that. The next possible solution is Triple H versus Seth Rollins. And I would not be shocked if Triple H comes back as the babyface to face a heel Seth Rollins, which is completely backwards.
No, it's totally bananas.
Yeah.
And Sean, you hinted to it. Our next talking point. Following Raw on Monday, we get a very weird, and the SmackDown tapings as well. We get a very weird notification that the July, was it July 9th?
No, 19th. It's later.
19th. July 19th, SmackDown will be live, and it's an indication of a brand split. Now,
they flat out said brand split.
Yes, yes. There are other things I want to talk about Raw, such as Ric Flair no longer being alongside Charlotte.
We kind of hit it
obviously.
That.
We did, but like. We didn't
hit on the incredibly awkward, really like real life promo that Charlotte cut on
the
Ric
uncomfortable
Flair.
Promo.
the uncomfortably real promo that she cut on Ric Flair not being there as, when she was a kid.
We'll push that to the side for this because this obviously takes precedent. Our opinion of a brand split. Now, let me lead off with this. I have stated in the past that the roster at this point is not ready for this. As much as I think a lot of us would say it because it does remind us of a better time, it also isn't practical right now. And as a fan of the WWE, their touring schedule is what needs to be fixed if they're going to do this. And obviously that's not going to change anytime soon because we're not being told it's going to change.
No, we're
going to
get more shows.
We're going to get more. Yes, Sean, you're right. We're going to get more shows with less guys that are going to result in more injuries and lower locker room morale. And we're going to get another Cody Rhodes situation. We're going to get another, especially after the guys they've cut. We are going to, this is a dark time that looks like it may rear its ugly head on the WWE. And I really do caution the WWE for doing what they're doing because they may go down a path that there is no turning back. Once you do this brand split, you can't immediately go back to the way things were. That is not how this works. Once you do this, you're stuck in this. So make sure you have all your ducks in a row. I really hope they roll that touring schedule back. I really hope they find some more talent.
I'm fine with the brand split. What they need to do is cut down on the house shows.
Yes.
That's what's causing all the problems.
Really,
like,
it really is.
Like, if they cut the house shows in half and kept them way lower, I mean, like, the injury problem would be way, way less of a prominent thing because, like, yeah, you make a good point
because how many big injuries happened on these house shows?
I mean, look what happened to Seth Rollins. That happened in England. He was facing Kane on a live show, and he exploded his knee.
I can think of four right off the bat. I can think of four. I mean, Seth Rollins. I can think of Emma. I can think of Sasha Banks, who reportedly now has a concussion. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And I can think of what almost happened to Kevin Owens with his knee.
What about Bray Wyatt in Italy?
Bray Wyatt in Italy. If you want to dig deeper, a dark match after a Raw cost Luke Harper.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And granted, that is a dark match. But at the same time, it's a part of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not a house show, but it's like the show's over, like... He had just done something. He doesn't need to do a full match.
And let's not forget, Naomi and Tamina are apparently out too from injuries that were probably done at a house show.
Yep.
Yes. When did Cesaro? What Cesaro's injury was? I believe was that during a house show?
I don't think it was. It happened at some place. I think it was just an accumulation of time.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia list of all the roster right now, and they keep good tabs of everybody that's inactive and why and who's hurt. And the only person that I'm seeing on here who's hurt that, like, it happened on Raw was Neville.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, the rest were all house shows or a dark match.
Even Tyson Kidd. I believe when Tyson Kidd broke his neck, that was a house show.
That was a dark match.
That was a dark match with Samoa Joe.
Yeah, before Raw, I think.
But it's a dark match issue. It's like it's an overwork thing. Like, Cesaro's injury, the rotator cuff, that is the textbook thing that goes with overuse injuries. Your rotator cuff can only take so much. It's a very small group of muscles. It's very easy to injure. But if you're using your shoulders too much and like you're overworking yourself, it's really easy to tear those little. There's three little connectors on your shoulder. They're very easy to tear. Mm.
And someone needs to take Randy Orton's garbage out for him. Like, we can't allow this to happen.
He can't be doing it blindfolded, RKOing the garbage cans. You're gonna hurt someone and hurt himself.
Like, this is what the brand split's going to help. Randy Orton will not be taking out his garbage anymore.
Thank God.
Real quick, you guys want to, I'm looking at the list. The people who are, like, inactive, who hasn't appeared in over 30 days, it's, like, Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker, The Rock, and Alicia Fox.
She hasn't been on TV.
No, just that in general. Because, like, they'll still do it for, like, house shit. Like, the people that keep track of everything that everyone does on this page is, like, props to them because I haven't seen Eric Roman and Braun Strowman on TV in forever, and they're not listed as inactive probably because of house shows. But Alicia Fox like hasn't been in anything,
I guess,
in the past 30 days. So
that is the only time you'll ever say a sentence with Brock Lesnar, Undertaker, and The Rock and Alicia Fox in the same sentence.
Honestly, if you never said anything, no one would have noticed.
No one would have noticed.
They would have.
That's funny.
But, you know, we brought up some good points here, and I think it's funny and kind of ironic that we immediately start talking about the brand split and our thoughts go to this injury issue.
And they just cut a whole bunch of people. Who were they filling these rosters with?
Yeah. Is there going to be like 15 people on each roster? Come on.
There are a lot of – and we can go into this. There are a lot of issues, especially where the titles line up. Now, if you put a certain set of titles on one and not the other, do you degrade that title? Are you degrading that show? Are you degrading the talent that's working for that title? These are a lot of issues that need to be worked out and explained before this happens. And also, Sean, you're gonna hit on this in a second. No storyline. This is just – it's happening now?
Yeah, it just happened.
What the hell?
But for no reason. It's not like Shane and Stephanie were not getting along and one wants a show and the other one wants their own show. Like none of that happened. They've been pretty buddy-buddy with each other.
Right now, to bring people that are listening to this podcast and have made it this far to a point, right now Stephanie technically is a babyface because they are working, I believe it's a book deal that she's also in, and they also want to kind of position her as the next Vince, and you can't really do that when she's being a heel. You have to kind of make her look good.
Well,
Shane's also a babyface.
Then again, they did release the Dudley Boys DVD when they were heels, so it doesn't always happen that way, you know.
Yes, but I kind of a different ish thing. I don't really know how to describe this situation, but it's like they want to make Stephanie more of a popular,
I think she,
not
I mean,
global name, but like kind of getting there.
I think once they do the brand split, she's going to go back to being a heel on Raw and Triple H
will be there. No doubt.
You know, I don't think that's going to change anything. And the other big question is, what do you do with the title belts? Because I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the World Heavyweight title as one title has only been around for 2 years.
Yep.
2.5 if you want to be generous. So this isn't, it hasn't been that long since we've had two belts.
No.
Do we do two belts? And if we do two belts, do we do two tag title belts? Do we do two women's belts?
You're bringing up all valid points, Sean. And again, we are at a point now where we just don't know.
I brought this point up before we started recording as well. When they started the brand split back in 2002, they had only the main titles that they had. They had the WWE Undisputed title, the Intercontinental title, the tag titles, the women's title, and I think that might have been it.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and what they did was they weren't brand specific. It was just if you were a champion, you were on both shows. And what they would do was the challengers for those titles would often alternate between the shows. So, for example, 1 month on a pay-per-view, Raw would have some guy challenging for the title. And on the next month, a SmackDown guy would challenge for the title. Now, the problem with that is that means you're not continuing storylines. It's just one match one month, one match another month. So how do you make this work with just one title? I can understand. Jesus, what's going on?
Someone's vacuuming.
Sorry, I just sneezed.
Jesus.
I can understand, like, if you want to just do the one world title and have that alternate. You could have the Intercontinental one show, the U.S. on the other show. The tag titles are going to be tough because you only have so many tag teams, and it's already kind of watered down as it is now. Like, let's be honest, who's a real challenger for the New Day other than
that was a point I was gonna get to during the when we were talking about it. But yeah, New Day right now it looks like is it gonna be Social Outcast?
I don't. And if you split the women, you know how you hey, and also you have a 3-hour show to book every week for Raw.
Yes.
SmackDown's not going to 3 hours. It's going to be still 2 hours. So you need to fill up that show with a smaller roster. I had the suggestion maybe just do women on Raw. That could fill up some time.
Maybe you go the tag route on Raw because you can split those tag teams up every now and then, and that could fill more time.
Tag could also be, you know, you could do, you know, that's one of the belts that alternates between the two brands.
Maybe what it'll be is this is more a way to get the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title on the center stage.
I mean, it would be one on one show and one on the other.
Yeah, maybe that's how you work this. Maybe it's like you only have like brand specific U.S. for Raw, SmackDown against the Intercontinental title, and then maybe you add one more, and that can be your way of like.
I wouldn't be opposed to them. I wouldn't be opposed to them splitting the tag titles again. Remember when they had the World Tag Team Championships and the WWE Tag Team Championships?
That was so damn confusing, though.
That was true. Yeah, that is true, because it was like, you're both tag team champions. What's going on?
And like, you know, they had more tag teams then, too. Realistically, how many tag teams can we list right now that are in the company?
You make a good point. I mean, like, off the top of my head, I can only reel out like six or seven. Right,
the Shining Stars.
No, okay, tag teams that could challenge for the titles.
You got the Shining Stars, the Golden Seeds.
That's funny. And,
right now I'm going to say before I let you talk, Steve. The only tag team that is kind of in position to challenge, and we're going to laugh at this, it's Social Outcast.
Why?
Because they're heels. But they obviously aren't as they did. They're not coming off a loss. The Dudleys are stuck in the program. They're not coming off a loss for the titles.
So they lost to the New Day on Raw in 2 minutes.
Hold on. What other heel tag team is ready right now?
The Club.
Are you going to push the club this fast?
I mean, I'm not saying that the New Day needs to lose their titles. I'm just saying there's really not a whole lot of challengers out there.
Well, when Enzo gets a little better, do you think that they'll go for it?
I don't know.
I think that's down the road. Because I think what they like to do with Enzo and Cass is they like to play like the, oh, they'll get there one day, like what they did with NXT, where it's like, oh, they'll get those tag titles one day.
But they're also in a program with the Dudleys right now.
Yes.
Yeah, they are. They got to finish that out.
This could end up being the jumping point into like a SummerSlam feud with the Club or the New Day. Maybe that happens. But Steve, I want your opinion really quick.
I mean, right as far as the brand split goes, it's bad timing, and it's just there's a lot of variables that aren't being answered and accounted for. And as far as title splits goes, the only title split they could do would be to divvy up the WWE Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship again, because it worked before and it was fine. And like Sean said, it hasn't been united for that long, so they could get away with splitting it. But I mean, I have a sneaking suspicion that they are not going to do that.
I don't think any of us really know what they're going to do, because this is just such a confusing.
Honestly, I'd rather see them split the title than do what they did in the past with just the one world champion, and then you have to alternate who gets a title shot which month, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you split the world heavy. Maybe you split the championship up, so you get the WWE Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship. Again, continue that line. Then you get the U.S. title on Raw, the Intercontinental Championship on SmackDown, and you just float the tag titles and the Women's Championship back and forth, because Women's Championship could get lost in the cards.
I know.
That's
why I really like the idea of having the women's division on Raw. Because, like I said, you need to fill out those 3 hours.
Yes.
You could have two women's matches within that span of time, and they're all there. You know, it's not like you have to, you know, it would be the same thing with the world title. 1 month,
but then
a
the
brand
same
gets
time,
a title shot, the next month, the other brand does. So you can't have actual storylines.
Yes, but at the same time, from using the same, and we talked about this as well before the podcast, using the aesthetic of what they went off of the last time. Granted, Paul Heyman was in charge of SmackDown at that point. Presuming that if this brand split goes the way it's going to go, Stephanie and Triple H would run Raw, and then you would have Shane on SmackDown. I'm just assuming maybe they do Stephanie and Triple H split it. Okay, they're going to do that way. Shane seems like the kind of guy that's more focused on wrestling.
Well, he's not in charge of the he doesn't actually have any real input on the product.
He's not going to have any exact input
now,
on the show.
Now, I'm not saying that it couldn't go back to being the wrestling show. It could, you know, we don't know.
Maybe then, because this would be the wrestling show, you would go the route of putting the Women's Championship on SmackDown.
Again, not as many. I mean, I know they're going live on Tuesdays, which will help a little bit, but I still, Raw is your flagship show. You know, more people are going to watch Raw. So if you want to get more eyes on that women's title, it has to be on Raw. That's the way I see it.
I don't know. we'll be debating about this a lot more. And trust me, this is not the last time we're going to be talking about this. But for at least the short period of time, this will be the last time we're talking about wrestling. Do want to give a news update. It looks like so far the two matches announced for the Money in the Bank will be Reigns versus Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And then, of course, they've named five out of the six out of the seven.
Yeah.
Six out of the seven for the Money in the Bank ladder match. It's going to be Sami Zayn, Dean Ambrose, Kevin Owens, Cesaro, Chris Jericho, and Paige, your lover, Alberto Del Rio.
Oh, wow, he's got a weird.
Now, before we go, I want to ask Stone Cold Steve Austin really quickly his opinion.
You were talking about
his opinion on the state of the WWE right now. So, Stone Cold, it's been a while since we've heard from you, but how? What's your opinion on the state of the WWE?
I tell you what, son, this is a damn mess. I can't even begin to describe the problems I've had with this whole gimmick setup. I tell you what, I go in there, I give that some bitch Hunter, I give him a few stunners to set his head right. Damn, we'll be off to a better start. But you get old Stone Cold as sheriff in there, damn, everything be a lot damn different.
Stone Cold, would you actually wear a sheriff hat and a little badge?
I mean, I've done it before. Why the hell not?
He did do that before.
Benny, check your facts. What the hell am I doing on this damn show?
Austin, how's your shoulder?
It hurts like a sumbitch. I tell you what, I went to hit Rusev, goddamn, almost fell off. A mess. I gave him that stunner. I felt my arm. I felt my knees buckling. So I had a good old sip of the Broken Skull IPA, which you can only find in California, apparently, because my buddy Steve Coltis can only dream about having it.
Now, Stone Cold, I really quickly want your opinion. Last time we saw you, you were fighting against the League of Nations that has since been torn apart. Is there one member of the League of Nations you'd like to fight?
I'd like to fight them all, son. All four of them are some bitches. They don't know what they're doing. They can wrestle the way out of a paper bag, I tell you what.
Would you stunner the Mohawk off Sheamus?
I'd stunner everybody in that damn company. I'm Stone Cold. I'm the Texas Rattlesnake. You got any more questions? What the hell's going on?
Stone Cold, I want really quickly your opinion of Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins.
Son, you gonna ask me about this? Jesus Christ! I tell you what, that Roman Reigns, he may be the guy, but I'm gonna be the guy to put my foot up his ass. And Rollins, boy, is your hair blonde? Is it blonde or brunette? You got to pick one. You can't do both. You look like you got your hair caught in some kind of terrible hairdressing gimmick. The hell is this?
Now, Stone Cold, they have tried to make Ryback, and he's on the show with us. He'll be talking to you in a second. They've tried to make Ryback into kind of a Stone Cold Goldberg hybrid looking like.
Really?
Dude.
I wouldn't describe it like that.
Benny, what in the hell are you saying to me right now?
I just want your opinion.
But I'm one big sumbitch ass kicker.
Ryback, are you
on this show? I heard you before.
Are you still on the program? Right, what's going on, Steve? How are you?
I will say I appreciate your hairstyle, keeping it repping for the bald man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
What I don't appreciate is you telling everybody they need to be paid the same, because I bust my ass. I'm a hardworking man. I work harder than any sumbitch in the WWE. Are you trying to tell me that Heath Slater going to be paid the same as Stone Cold Steve Austin?
If Heath Slater and Stone Cold Steve Austin are putting in the same amount of hours, they should be getting paid equally.
Ryback, you sound like some kind of damn socialist talking to me right now.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's what we need right now in this country. Maybe we need a guy like Bernie Sanders paying all of us equally. All the wrestlers, that is. The rest of the country, I don't care. Just big guys like me.
Why don't you go hang out with that sumbitch Rusev? You two would get along with your political ideologies.
Look, Ruru's he's a big guy, but I'm a bigger guy than him. I'm bigger than all of you. I'm bigger than you, Stone Cold. If I might be frank with you, I'm a lot bigger.
You may be bigger than me, son, but this boot will still fit in that big ass of yours.
I got a big ass. You got a little ass. I got a big ass. And you know what? I wanted to be on your podcast, Steve, but you know what? I went to Chris Jericho instead, and he's a great guy. He's a little guy, but I'm a bigger guy than him. But at least we both got paid equally for that podcast.
Would you say that I'm bigger than Chris Jericho?
No, you're a little bigger, but you're not as big as me. I'm really big.
But Chris Jericho doesn't have them fancy knee braces that I got.
Well, you know what? You know that's true. But you know, you don't believe in equal pay, so that makes you a little guy. And Chris Jericho is a bigger guy than you in that sense, but not as big as you physically, or me for that matter, because I'm a bigger guy than all of you.
Is it because he's a damn Canadian? Is that what I'm? Is that what I'm
that is conversation? That has nothing to do with it. You racist, but you know,
you racist.
I didn't know that
before it goes too far.
I didn't know that being Canadian was a race, but okay, I'm gonna leave it at that.
Well, Stone Cold and Ryback, thank you both for joining us on the show today. Paige as well, thank you.
Can I say something, Stone Cold?
Okay. Yes, my dear. I've heard that you've got quite the crush on old Stone Cold.
Well, not as much as I love Del Rio.
Damn it, son. Jesus Christ.
But, you know, Stone Cold, I went to your ice cream place and it was really good.
Ice cream place? What in the hell? When did I open an ice cream parlor? I would be there if I knew it was open.
There you are, where you got the stones and they're really cold.
Oh, God damn. This is the fifth time this week. God damn it. It's cold. It's cold stone, not stone cold. There's a difference. See, you have to rearrange the words. There's syllables. There's phrases.
What?
There's different words in the sentence.
Hey, do you guys know that the employees at Cold Stone don't get paid equally? It's
I need another beer. I've had enough. I need another beer. God.
Well, thank you very much to our wrestling comrades for joining us on here. Paige, Ryback, Stone Cold Steve Austin. You can follow me at the BNP Express on Twitter. Sean, please just wrap this up. I can't.
You can follow me on Twitter at @_BrackShow. Jobo.
You can follow me on Twitter at JoboCop93, and I'm going to let Ryback plug our contest, if that's all right.
Yeah.
All right, you can do the Blah Blah Earth contest. Take a selfie of you anywhere on the planet Earth, and we will send you a signed Blu-ray copy of the 1997 Jim Carrey comedy classic, Liar Liar. You know, Jim Carrey's a little guy, but he's a big comedian. He warms the hearts of everybody, including myself. I'm a big Jim Carrey fan. But, you know, he got paid more than the rest of them, but I'll overlook that for now, and we'll move on. So if you want a Blu-ray copy of Liar Liar, do the contest.
And Steve.
Well, you can follow me at a – hold on. I'll give you – hold on. Drink your beer and wait. God. You can follow me at Saiyan Barbarian, Saiyan Barbarian, and you can follow me at Steve Austin BSR on Twitter. This is Steve Austin coming to you from 316 Gimmick Street here on the Broken Skull Ranch, and you're listening to the Blah Blah Sports Podcast, and that's the bottom line, because I said so. Are you happy now? Are you happy that you got to say, I'm happy now? Get out of my room. You smell and you're all old. Get out of here. All right, fine. Damn it.